Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Sports Radio 99 The Game. One of the things that I was thinking about this here, welcome back to the morning show on this Friday, I was kind of chiding Gary Bettman. One of the reasons I'm not a big fan of Gary Bettman is, as the commissioner of the NHL, Hugh, is I don't think he's really done a great job of putting his stars out there in the public. In other words, I've always said that, you know, Sidney Crosby could walk through Perimeter Mall when it's packed, and I'm not sure anybody would know who he is.
Not down here, but Alex Ovechkin, even Alex Ovechkin,
right,
would come down here, and I think some people would recognize him, but not a whole lot.
I think he stands on a street corner in Alpharetta with a sign saying, "Do you know who I am?" And people would drive by. Know who that guy is?
Of Atlanta, though, John.
Well, we don't have a But I understand that. But that's up to the commissioner to get these guys front and center. But, you know, get them in commercials, get them on talk shows, make them. You can't just sit around, because it seems like Bettman sits around and waits for Gretzky to happen. You can't. You have to be really aggressive.
That was a different time,
though. You have to be aggressive in promoting your product.
Yeah, I agree with that.
That brings me to NASCAR. Here we are on the edge of Daytona. Now, NASCAR, I'm gonna take you back. The really sad and unfortunate, you know, event that surrounded Davey Allison and his death. Davey Allison was on the cusp prior to the accident, the helicopter accident, of being a superstar in NASCAR and being really a face. And then, of course, Dale Sr. passed. This sport needs to have stars, you know, and this is, you know, one of the things a France family has to do, Hugh, is sort of like Gary Bettman. You're charged with creating new stars. Now, they're hoping that Chase Elliott, it's like they're hoping Chase Elliott becomes a star. They're hoping that Bubba Wallace, who finished second last year, becomes a star because, you know, hey, we got the African American. He finished second. You know,
driving
Richard Petty's car.
Yeah, not only that, John. There's been a real push to get more minorities involved with NASCAR. They're trying to do NASCAR. One thing I say about NASCAR is this: they've been doing everything that they possibly can to listen to all types of ideas to make it better.
I know that they're pushing for minorities. I know they're pushing for female drivers now that Danica's not there. They've got a number of female drivers they're bringing up through the ranks. I get that. But, boy, that seems like you're a little behind. You should have been doing this 15 years, 20 years ago.
Yeah. If I had to look at one thing and as a fan of NASCAR and say, okay, this is probably what you need to probably do better. Why are you having a Super Bowl at the beginning of the season, like at the absolute beginning of the season, you're having your best race, so your number one race, and that's the one we're about to have this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
You have your number one race,
and then they tried to create this point system with the chase that would give you a grand champion at the end of the year, and I mean, I applaud them for trying. I don't know that it's really worked, but again, you know. You have a push-me-pull-you with NASCAR. There are a lot of old heads in NASCAR, Hugh, who are still very mad at the sport because they treated this as a Southern sport, and then we had Days of Thunder happen, and NASCAR wanted to go national. And when it did, some of the old heads, when you're taking races away from North Wilkesboro and places in Richmond and places like that, I'm not too happy about that, to go to places where people still yawn. You know?
Yeah, and I remember where they started having the races in NASCAR in the Poconos. Mm-hmm. Which I thought was pretty cool because that kind of, you know, changed it up a little bit. Now you're racing around these winding tracks and everything to help kind of, like, get people excited about it. But I think, man, that the one thing that I would say is that you probably have to have the best race of the year. You probably have to move that. You probably have to move Daytona to the end of the year.
Yeah, you're up against football.
I know. But still, man, it's a little weird.
It is the Super Bowl of racing. It is the first race of the year. It's historically been that way from the time that they were – in road racers on a beach back with 100 years ago, it seems. It wasn't that long, but it seems. Let's take you to Daytona here, and we are looking forward to the big race, the Super Bowl of NASCAR, Super Bowl of stock car racing. Larry McReynolds, who has been working for Fox for forever and is an expert in NASCAR. Larry Mack, joining John and you. Hey, Larry, how you doing?
Oh, good morning. How are you guys doing?
We're awesome. Awesome. So, Larry, tell me, what is it like to be in the infield at the Daytona 500? What is that feeling like?
Well, I tell you, what I'm feeling this week is kind of a new energized just environment. And when I was driving in and out of there the other night, best I could tell, it didn't look like you could take a shoehorn and put another motorhome inside that infield. I don't know that it sold out as far as the infield, but it can't be far from it. And I just think there's just a newfound energy about our sport getting ready for 2019. When I look at all the different storylines and something that seems to have the majority of our race fans excited about this new season.
Wait a minute, Larry. So not only are the drivers there with their family and their motor, the nice lavish motorhomes, I might add. You mean you have fans that are like kind of like hanging out, partying like already?
Oh, they've been there. I got there Thursday a week ago. Like 2 days before on-track activity, and fans were already starting to pour in there. Of course, there was a fair amount of fans camped in the infield there around Lake Lloyd and all for last weekend for the Clash and for qualifying. But by the time Wednesday night came, getting ready for the dual races last night, there is a lot of folks there. Yeah, there's the secluded area for the drivers, owners, the crew chief, the broadcasters, their families, and their motor coaches. But there's a lot of energetic fans throughout the infield as well.
Larry McReynolds has covered NASCAR for Fox for a number of years. He joins us from Daytona. The 500 is on Sunday starting at 2 o'clock on Fox as we get ready for the Great American Race here. Hey, Larry, let me ask you a little bit about the field here. Boy, this kid, William Byron, I mean, we were just looking. I mean, he looks like he's 15. I mean, this is – he's got the pole here. This is pretty heady stuff for this guy.
Well, it really is. You know, sitting on a pole for any race is a big deal. It's a big deal for the driver. It's a big deal for the race team. But when you come here, and I was fortunate enough to sit on the pole in 1995, Robert Yates Racing with Dale Jarrett, It's one of the poles that kind of stays with you because it's for the biggest race of the year. And qualifying, unlike most race weekends where it's the day before the race or 2 days before the race, qualifying for the Daytona 500 front row is a week out. So you get to enjoy it for a full week. Now, running a couple of fast laps by yourself, that's one thing. And I don't want to dilute that effort, but getting out there Sunday for 200 laps, 500 miles, with 39 other drivers that's trying to win possibly the biggest race of their career, that's a whole another storyline right there. So we'll see how things go there. He looked pretty solid last night in the dual race. He kind of got shuffled out when we had that cycle of early green flag pit stops. But it's pretty obvious all the four Hendrick Chevrolet drivers all qualifying in the top four last Sunday. Looks like they've got some pretty good speed in those race cars.
You know what? I feel like I missed my calling because I've always wanted to be a NASCAR driver and drive around that track doing like 200 miles an hour with like 30 other cars with me. What is that like? What is that like being in Daytona and driving around a track that fast and you have other drivers beside you? What is that feeling?
Well, I'm probably not the right one to answer that because I have never driven a race car in my life. I've only worked on them, you know, as a crew chief for 18, 19 years, been doing the broadcasting. But, you know, spending the time with drivers over the years and then spending time with Jeff Gordon and Darrell Waltrip, Daytona is not so much a physical race.
Mm-hmm.
It's 500 miles, it's 200 laps, it's going to go probably for 3.5 hours possibly. But it's more of a mental game because, yeah, you're out there three wide, six, seven rows deep, and you're running 190-plus, close to 200 miles per hour. I know the drivers I worked with, talking with Darrell and Jeff, that after that race, whether you go to victory lane, whether you finish fifth or 15th, you absolutely are mentally drained. Maybe not physically drained, but totally mentally drained.
Larry McReynolds joining us from Daytona. And as we talk about this, we are looking ahead to the 500 Sunday at 2 on Fox.
So, Larry, wait a minute. So you mean to tell me you worked on all that horsepower, being the crew chief, and you never got out there on the track once and took your baby, your work, out on the track ever?
That would not have been a good thing. You would not have wanted to be behind the wheel of a race car. I'm the guy on the interstate, probably in the left lane, 5 to 10 miles per hour slower than
I do
traffic.
Not it's believe likely, that. I don't believe
more
that.
More than likely, I've got my left blinker on at the same time. Yeah, I'm not the guy you want behind the wheel of a race car.
I cannot believe that. Working on all that beautiful horsepower, all those beautiful engines. And never once got around the track.
Well, it could be.
If everybody wanted to be a race car driver, who would be there to work on?
I guess you're right. I just couldn't imagine like working on that, knowing what it sounds like, and knowing what you put into it, and not going out there and see what it would do. I just couldn't. I'm like I said. I think I missed my calling, and plus I was too big to get in the NASCAR. But I definitely think I missed my calling.
Larry Mack, I
didn't miss my calling by not being a race car driver. I can promise you that. I would not have had a very fruitful career.
Larry McReynolds, longtime crew chief and, of course, Fox commentator joining us from Daytona. Larry Mack, let's talk a little bit about the race and this year. We mentioned the kid, William Byron, on the pole. You have the favorites, you know, the veteran guys now in Harvick and Keselowski and whatnot. But as you look at next generation, certainly around here, this being Bill Elliott territory, you know, Chase from same place. Chase Elliott and his, he'd been so close to possibly winning. And Bubba Wallace, who came in so close last year in that iconic car. If you look at those two guys, are Bubba Wallace and Chase Elliott about to pop to that next level in terms of what they mean to the sport?
Well, I think Chase Elliott made a pretty strong statement the second half of last year. Yeah, we were all sitting week in and week out wondering, when is he going to win? And we were almost getting to the point, is he going to win? And then once he won that first race at Watkins Glen last August, it was game on. He ended up winning three races. He was the only Hendrick driver, including Jimmy Johnson last year, to find victory lane. And he had three of the wins of the four wins that Chevrolet had last year. So I think Chase Elliott, he's about to really break out. He started it last year. Unfortunately, with Bubba Wallace, I just don't think it's a fair assessment on him, because I just think it's the facts of life that Richard Petty Motorsport, that they are behind right now. And it's like Kevin Harvick says, you can't drive a slow car fast. It just won't get there. Now, he had a great run last night in the dual race. He's going to start close to the front, I think either row three or row four on Sunday. When you come here to Daytona or Talladega with that restrictor plate, it kind of becomes the equalizer. Finishing second last year, can Bubba Wallace win this thing on Sunday? Absolutely. People ask me who the favorites are for Sunday. Well, you know what? Just look at the starting lineup, and all of them are favorites, because this is a place where a lot of things can happen, a lot of things can unfold, like it did with Trevor Bayne back in 2011. But, yeah, I just think for Bubba Wallace to move to the forefront, either A, he's going to have to get in a top-notch ride, and it hurts me to say that about the King and Richard Petty Motorsports, but they are behind, and they've got to get their program stepped up if Bubba Wallace wants to bear any fruit.
Larry, I have a question for you, because as much as I love NASCAR and I try to explain it to other people, to the masses, it's like a lot of people aren't watching NASCAR as much as I think they need to. What can NASCAR do to help bring some fans back to the track?
Well, they're working hard at it. The new group here, Jim France, Steve Phelps, the president, everybody, including the broadcast partners, including the teams, including the tracks. We are all working hard. And, you know, I think the sport is healthy. I know we're not where we were a decade ago, not with attendance, not with ratings. But you know what? When that green flag waves on Sunday, including the people I spoke about in the infield, there's still going to be close to 100,000 people there. That's not too bad in today's society for a sporting event. And our ratings are still second only to the NFL. So they are working hard. I think a lot of these new drivers coming up, like Chase Elliott, like William Byron and Alex Bowman and Eric Jones, I think that can help pull more eyeballs from our younger demo to watching the sport. But I think the biggest thing that fights us today is what fights everything as far as sporting events, and it's just the way people go about keeping up with sporting events. People no longer sit behind that television for 2.5, 3, 3.5 hours. They don't necessarily go and watch the event live. They're on their smartphones, their iPads, everything else, watching it in that method. You know, I see my kids. My kids are in their 20s, and that's what they do when it comes to watching baseball, football, basketball, or anything else.
All right, final question for me for Larry McReynolds and Larry Mack. Thank you for taking time down at Daytona. And we've been talking about Chase Elliott because, you know, he's kind of, you know, a local guy here for us up there from Dawsonville. He starts in the 18th spot. Austin Dillon, defending champion, in the 20th spot. You have some of the, you know, favorites maybe more towards the top because Kevin Harvick will be on row two with Joey Logano. 5:30-ish on Sunday, who's going to be the guy standing outside his car waving his hand in the air?
Yeah, and I mean, that's the question everybody's asking today. You think about Austin Dillon, you talked about him starting mid-pack. Last year, because of being in a backup car, he had to start at the rear of the field. So where you start is not significant of how you're going to run by no stretch of the imagination. Yeah, it's always nice to start up front. You get good pit selection. But I like the Fords right now. The Fords have been so strong. There was a big question how this new Ford Mustang would be. Well, it looks like to me they've not missed a beat with it. They swept the top three spots in both the dual races last night. But I tell you, I just like the guy that hoisted the championship trophy about 3 or 4 months ago at Homestead. He won his dual race last night on a last lap pass. If you pin me down and say, who's going to win? Right now, I have to point my finger at Joey Logano in that 22 car, which this would be his second Daytona 500 win.
Larry Mack, do appreciate your insight. Thank you very much, as
Thank
always.
You very much.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Larry McReynolds live from Daytona. He's got Joey Logano in the winner's circle. Let's see what happens on Sunday. 2 o'clock start on Fox.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Congratulations to our own Hugh Douglas on his entrance into the Black Football College Hall of Fame.
Hugh Douglas's return to Philadelphia has been so smooth, it's as though he never left. His icon status went unchanged in his absence.
All through his career, especially in Philadelphia, Hugh Douglas was just a beast coming off the edge, always a problem. The one thing that I remember most about him, his motor.
You know what the great part about this is? Everybody accepts me like I continue to be a part of the Philadelphia Eagles.
What Douglas desires most is a championship ring. Just ask opposing quarterbacks. Hugh Douglas usually gets what he wants.
Can you dig it, baby?
Congratulations, Hugh, from all of us at Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Morning show with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. This hour of the show brought to you by Renter's Warehouse. Yeah, tomorrow's going to be a big day. I mean, well, it's already begun for you. Hugh, when you leave the show today,
I got to put on some school
clothes. You are in Hall of Fame mode.
Yeah, I got to put on some school clothes because I got some things I have to do. And I have to go meet with some people. And I thought I was going to get away with wearing what I got on. But I don't think that's going to fly. Like Shannon Sharp told me last week, I dress like I'm homeless. So I guess I got to run home and throw some clothes on and come back to the city. So
don't make me act like the dad this week. Go and handle your business.
Yeah, I'm gonna do it, man. I know. I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna go home and change clothes. Put on.
I want to know when you became such this icon. I want
to
know.
Hey, man, when we go to Philly, man, we ain't paying for no meals. What you talking about? Trying to play me.
We get free cheesesteaks
all day. Hey, how many cheesesteaks you want? 1, 2, 3 water ice?
We got you. What is that cheesesteak place that's downtown in Philly that everybody knows?
Pasagino's?
Is that what it is? Yeah.
Yeah,
I've seen it on the TV.
You don't prefer those?
I don't like those. Oh. I don't go to. I go to. It used to be called Chinks. They changed the name for obvious reasons. Maybe Ishka Bibbles down on South Street, or I used to go to a place called Ishka Bibbles.
Is that someone's last name?
No, that's the name of. That's the one that, like, when most people go on South Street and come to Philadelphia, uh-huh, that's where they go. I used to go to this place called Mama's. It was right off of in Bala Cynwyd, where they give you these cheese steaks the size of haggis. You remember how they made the big old haggis thing? Haggis. Like, they give you some big old cheese steaks. I used to go there, too.
What's the place you would tell me about called Chickie Pete's?
Chickie and Pete's? Oh, that's where you get the crab fries and the crab lobster pizza. Like, that's the place you want to hang out at after, like, Eagles games, Phillies games, because, you know, everything is right there. Sixers games.
Like, so that's where you're an icon.
Yeah, I'm an icon all there. You ain't getting no. We go to Chickie Pete's, dog. We ain't paying for no meals, dog. That's all I got to say.
I was just trying to wind you up, man. That's all, man. Hey, I'm proud of you, bro.
We go
I'm
to
proud
Chickie and Pete's, dog. We free. We get free refill. You want a free refill? I got you, dog.
Braves pitchers and catchers report today down to Florida. Their first workout is tomorrow. Full team will be there next Wednesday, and then a week from, next Thursday. Not a week from today, but next Thursday, they'll be ready to go, and the full team will be working out, and then spring training games begin, and here we go with a season I think is going to be a very interesting one. I mean, yes, Philadelphia's gotten better on paper in the offseason. We expect that the Nationals and the Mets are going to be tough. The NL East could be, except for the Marlins, a tough division. But I have a lot of faith in this Braves team.
Nothing has been done yet. And that's the thing that I think people need to realize is that there's still moves that could potentially be made. There's still some free agents out there, a ton of free agents that have not been signed. I think the biggest thing is that everybody's trying to make sure that they don't handicap or hamstring their club for the long haul. That's the biggest thing. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, I think it's really the length of the contract. So the amount of money that's being thrown around for, at least talked about for Harper and Machado, is in the neighborhood of $30 million a year. And it seems like a number of teams are comfortable at that figure. It's just how long do you want that $30 million price tag hanging around your head for a couple of guys who are 26 years old? And most teams are saying 3 years, maybe four, because they don't want Albert Pujols to happen. I mean, Albert Pujols, what did the Angels get out of that deal for Pujols? Not a damn thing. Think about it. What did the Angels get? Nothing.
Yeah, and I think teams are trying to move away from that. Did they make any playoff appearances with Pujols? Did they even go to the playoffs?
Maybe once.
And I think teams are trying to move away from that. I mean, you're looking at potentially, you know, Bryce Harper with this 10-year, $300 million deal, and there's a potential that, you know, he might not be great for your clubhouse, you know, and the fact that you're paying him $300 million with options at the end of that deal, I don't think teams want to step up to the plate for that.
And Team C, the Kansas City Royals use this young talent that they had, you know, the Canes and the Gordons, those guys of the world, and make it all the way to the World Series. And what Oakland has done with a payroll under $70 million.
Wait, Milwaukee, did you say Kansas City? You said Kansas City,
yeah,
the Royals.
Yeah, a few years ago. Right,
yeah, a few years ago, yeah.
When they made like three, 4 years ago.
And Chicago,
yeah, well,
for the most part.
Yeah, and the Cubs for the most part. And certainly the Milwaukee Brewers last year and what they were able to accomplish. And, yes, the Atlanta Braves. Because the Braves have something. See, this is what Braves fans tend to be missing here. They have a luxury that few teams have.
They got bread.
They've got young stars coming out their ears when it comes to pitching. They were the number one ranked minor league system in Major League Baseball 3 years ago, the number one ranked minor league system 2 years ago, and they're still the number two ranked minor league system in all of baseball, and they've got all of these guys starting to come up. We could have an explosion this year of, let's find out how good Ian Anderson is. Ian Anderson could be a star in Major League Baseball. Tuki Doucet could be a star.
Yeah.
Mike Soroka could be a star.
But when you get a taste of playoff baseball, I mean, and I get it. Fans are looking at it like, if we get a taste of it, now why not push all the way in? But I think that for the Braves, the biggest thing is that it has to be built to sustain for a long period of time. That's the way that they're looking at it. Because you're talking about all those young stars, John, that are in position to be here for a long time. So you want to try to make this run year in and year out. You want to be what the Patriots are. Bottom line, that's what you're trying to do. Well, you're trying to be representatives in the NL every year.
And the last thing you want to do, in my opinion, is to give up on everything. You went through those 3 years that we went through with building these, you know, young stars, the Ronald Acuñas of the world. Sean Newcomb was a trade, but I mean, and building up your guys, you know, Ozzie Albies, your guys that you brought up through your system, you know, the Tukey Toussaint who are ready now, the Kobe Allards and the guys. You went through all that to build this system up so that they would start to pop for you now and Austin Riley. And so when people say, why didn't you go out and get JT Realmuto? Why did you bring back Brian McCann? Well, because, you know, JT Realmuto was going to cost you Austin Riley and somebody like Kyle Wright and somebody else. And the Braves said, wait a second. We didn't go through all of this to bring all these guys up, to have them sit on the edge of stardom and have you come and fleece us to so we can get one guy.
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing. You have a lot of young and up-and-coming talent for the Braves that are in line, whether it be this year or the following year, and you don't want to hamstring their growth and development. You really don't. You want to give them the opportunity to come up and add them along with your other young stars and try to build it that way so that way you can have more control over them. You know, you get a guy that's out there that's going to – you sign him to a long-term contract, he's gonna hamper the growth of somebody else potentially, especially when you're talking about their bullpen or you're talking about their starting pitching.
Yeah, so it's going to be really fascinating to see because we talk about things – all right, let's take that young pitching core. Right? You have the beginning of this staff now, which is young and very good. Fulton Everett's still a young pitcher, and he's at the moment your number one starter. Yes, Sean Newcomb has to show – again, I understand. Sean Newcomb's got to regain that form. He's got to show us that he could do it through the long haul. I get this.
And Julio Teheran has to do it at home.
But now you go from beyond those four and include Gausman in that. And you start to look at Soroka, Toussaint, Anderson, Wright, Allard. You know, let's just – we'll just leave it at those five. There's others, Bryce Wilson and more. But if you leave it at those five, you need two of those five to hit. And I believe that you're going to find out this year how good Ian Anderson could possibly be as a major league pitcher. I'm excited to see what Tukey Toussaint offers you long-term as a starter in this rotation.
I agree.
And we saw flashes before he got injured of Mike Soroka. Can he get back to that, what he was doing at the beginning of the year last year when he had those three or four really good starts back-to-back-to-back-to-back near the one-year no-hitter? So, you know, we have all these guys ready to go, and they're ready to pop, so let's give them an opportunity to go and to do that.
And not talking about, like, control, financial control, and they're cheaper.
Yeah, I want to see.
Don't forget that either. They're cheaper.
You know, you may start the season with Fulton Everett and Newcomb and Gausman and Teheran in your top four. Maybe you end the season with Fulton Everett and Newcomb and Anderson and Toussaint and Soroka. You never know.
Got to give him a chance.
You know,
that's the bottom line. You got to give him a chance.
Right. And so this is a case where we know that the Braves are very good defensively. We know that they're very good offensively. And by the way, they're an exceptional defensive team. Their outfield is full of gold gloves, all three of them. Even Marquez was a gold glover. Enciarte was a gold glover. Acuna will be a gold glover. They defensively in the infield, they are very good. Freddie's a gold glover. Swanson, one of the best defensive shortstops in the game. And we know that Ozzie Albies and Swanson are a tremendous double play combination. So this is a very good defensive and a very good offensive team. It's the bullpen that you have to work on. That's why hopefully the Braves will still make a move. And I'm still going to hold out that Kimbrough will be that move. Big weekend ahead for us. He's going into a Hall of Fame. Hawks have hit the All-Star break, and we're going to give you the update on the poll this morning. Kind of a grade did he give the Hawks to this point in the year to the break? That's next with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92 on the Game.
Congratulations to our own Hugh Douglas on his entrance into the Black Football College Hall of Fame.
Hugh Douglas's return to Philadelphia has been so smooth, it's as though he never left. His icon status went unchanged in his absence.
All through his career, especially in Philadelphia, Hugh Douglas was just a beast coming off the edge, always a problem. The one thing that I remember most about him, his motor.
You know what the great part about this is? Everybody accepts me like I continue to be a part of the Philadelphia Eagles.
What Douglas desires most is a championship ring. Just ask opposing quarterbacks. Hugh Douglas usually gets what he wants.
Can you dig it, baby?
Congratulations, Hugh, from all of us at Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Morning show with John and the future Hall of Famer as he gets ready. I know you're probably getting there. You're like, okay, let's just.
No, it's just like, you know, the biggest thing is, like, I'm getting tweets and texts saying, boy, you better put some clothes on. Like, that's what I'm getting. I'm getting that more than anything. Like, people ask me, man, what you going to wear? Like, and do you need some help picking out your clothes? So, no, I'm good. I got it. I'm going to put on some clothes. I'm going to be presentable. I'm not going to go out there looking like I'm homeless. I'm not gonna do that.
Let's update you on our On our poll question of the day, what grade would you give the Atlanta Hawks at this point of the season with the don't let last night's game cloud your judgment? 58 games, and so far 7% say they get an A, 34% gave them a B, which I gave them, 44% gave them a C, so that's winning, that's what you gave them, you, and 15% are giving them a D. I know that some people said an F. I was like, based on what? I mean, they get an F if they're 19-39. If they're 19-39 at this point next year, okay, yeah, that's a fail. You've got to be better next year. But right now, 19-39, I mean, yeah, it was an awful game last night. But I think on balance, this season has been somewhat successful. I mean, they've
not bad. You know, I mean, it's a little bit better than what we expected. I mean, to be full transparency, it's a little bit better than what we expected, and it has the potential to be a lot better than what we expected as far as the wins are concerned.
So there's that. If you want to vote on that, that's at 929 the game on our Twitter. Now, there is a story that we want to update you on that we talked about 10 days ago.
About a week
so?
Ago. Yeah, yeah, about a week ago. It was all good just a week ago. Yeah.
Remember the story about the dude that was running through the mountains of Colorado, got attacked by a lion and said he killed the lion?
Yes. We finally found out his name. His name is Travis Kaufman. And he's 31 years old. And he had a chance to tell his story, which was pretty chilling.
I turned around and just was pretty bummed out to see a mountain lion chasing after me. So I stopped and I threw my hands up in the air and I started shouting. And unfortunately, the shouts didn't deter it. So it just kind of kept running and lunged at me. It was going toward my face, so I threw up my hands to kind of block my face, at which point it grabbed onto my hand and wrist. And from there, it started to claw at my face and neck, and that's when kind of my fear response turned into more of a fight response, because I realized how close it was getting to my eyes, and it got a claw on my lip, and I tried to throw it off me at that point, and then we took a little tumble down the south side of the trail, and down there just kind of had a little wrestling match at which...
Wow, just unbelievable stuff. Then he grabbed a rock and started to beat the lion on its head and ended up killing the lion. I mean, just a harrowing experience.
Yeah, but when I heard the story, like, this is where it kind of, it conflicts a little bit. The first story we heard said the lion was like, it was a 4 to 5 month old lion. It was a baby lion that was like 80 pounds.
Right.
He weighs about 150 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Not a story saying that it was like a 40-pound lion. Bottom line is this. He survived something that, like, when you think about it, he was very, very lucky, John. Because if he'd, like, number one, he caught a baby lion. And number two, the lion wasn't as big as it potentially could be, because those things could get big. There's some big mountain lions out there. So he really caught a break. And then it kind of makes you wonder, what made the lion attack him? Because, you know, normally when you yell and screaming at something like that, they don't, like, they usually run away. And it sounds like from his description that the lion was kind of stalking him a little bit. If he'd had on headphones, it would have been a wrap for him. And it just kind of makes you wonder.
An amazing story.
What's going on with these animals?
Right. It's an amazing story that he tells. I mean, I can't even imagine what he must have been going through. And I guess you'd have no choice. He's right. You would, you know, what's your first reaction? Oh, my God, you know, you're playing defense. And then once this thing kind of grabs hold of you, the next thing you got to do, you got to fight.
Yeah, it makes me think about that one story, John. I got a story yesterday talking about the zombie deer that's running around. It's starting with the animals, people, and it's going to get to humans eventually. I'm just saying, y'all need to get prepared for the end of days. That whole the zombie thing that's going on right now, hey, just be prepared. I'm just saying. I'm not trying to make anybody nervous or anything like that. But, you know, you got these animals starting to act strange and starting to attack people and stuff because, like, I was reading somewhere, mountain lions, there's probably only been in life like 3 or 4 mountain lion attacks in a while. I'm probably making that up. But it serves the purposes of the story that I'm about to tell. Y'all just be careful. We had a couple, like last year, we had the zombie raccoons. And then we got the zombie deer that's running around. Oh, y'all didn't get the story I sent yesterday about the zombie deer?
Yeah, you, about deer.
I know you saw it, Daryl, about the zombie deer.
I hadn't heard about the raccoons.
Yeah, it was like last year the zombie raccoons was running around.
You are not an icon, you.
No, I'm talking, like, listen, you think I'm playing. I'm talking about these animals. It started with the animals. It's about to move to humans.
Is this a TV show that I missed?
No, this is the Walking Dead about to happen, dude. You better get hip to what's going on, man. Mm-hmm.
Don't bring this up tomorrow night.
No, I'm just saying. I'm trying to tell y'all, dude.
This is on my heart.
This is some strange things going on out here, man. You got sharks attacking people off the coast.
Right.
Like, dude, I'm just
saying. That's their home, though. I mean,
man. You running around in their natural habitat and all this other. Y'all, listen. All right, dude. Y'all ain't got to listen to what I'm saying. But I got my swords. I got my weaponry. Don't come. Listen, when the zombies attack, don't ask me to save you.
I'm running to the icon.
And I got gas in my truck. I ain't going to drive the Hellcat. I'm going to drive the truck. I got gas in my truck. I'm just letting you know.
This is how the weekend starts. Hey, there's an update here. Pro Football Talk is reporting now. They have just tweeted out. The per sources, the Falcons have told Brian Poole, you are free to leave the team. So Brian Poole will not be tendered.
Wow.
And Brian Poole is being told, according again to Pro Football Talk, per sources, Falcons have informed cornerback Brian Poole he will not be offered a new contract. He will not be tendered, and he is going to be released and a free agent as of March 13th. So another big change for the Falcons. Now here goes Brian Poole into free agency.
Well, I mean – there's going to be a lot of wholesale changes. We knew that was going to be the case. I'm pretty sure Brian Poole will get a job. I know it's unfortunate. You never want to be let go, but being let go is a lot better than being fired. I just want to say that. I mean, it's just like your contract ran out. You get a chance to go somewhere else. That does not necessarily say that there will probably be an opportunity to come back if that's the case. I tell you what to keep your eye on, John.
Mm-hmm.
Big Beasley.
Yeah, that's the
show.
We're waiting for that to drop. I mean, will that drop?
Keep an eye on that. Like
this
Poole,
weekend.
You can make an argument that a lot of people thought under the circumstances, Brian Poole didn't play bad. Keep an eye on Vic Beasley. Coach Quinn is at that. He's in the lab, and he's breaking down film, and he's doing a heavy critique of everybody. Keep an eye on Vic Beasley.
So add to the list of Rocky Alford, Brooks Reed, Matt Bryant, the name Brian Poole, who will not be a member of the Falcons next year. So that's four now. We'll see what they're going to have to, you know, we know that Giorgio DeVecchio is going to be the kicker. That's the only thing we do know. But the guys, now you've lost Rocky Alford and Brian Poole out of the secondary. That starts to make you wonder if, in fact, they are looking at DeAndre Baker
You best believe that whatever happens, John, they're going to draft a lot of defense in this upcoming draft.
They're going to have to.
Yeah.
Three defenders already gone.
Yeah.
A rush ended, two guys in the secondary.
And you don't know, Ricardo's coming off of that Achilles injury too, so you never know.
You never know. I mean, you'll have Keanu back, but.
Well, you and free don't be surprised you see some names from free agency.
Well, that's true too.
You know, you never know. I mean, don't look like right now Coach Quinn playing as far as getting this defense back to where it needs to be. Look like he's on a mission, so we'll see. This might be a whole new look Atlanta Falcons defense from front to back.
Yeah, maybe.
Watch those zombie deer, though, for real. And raccoons.
Rick and John.
Mountain lion.
Could be on the attack, except it's Randy Mack today. It's Rick and Randy Mack. I say Randy Mack sighting. Coming up top of the hour on Sports Radio 90. Join the game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.